Fan.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work, so I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
This is your Make the NFC North Your Oyster Leader Fan. Fan Radio Network.
Tweet that.
Yeah, tweet it. And KFAN.com. 1 minute, 53 seconds past 3 Central Daylight Time. Welcome back. It's a Monday edition of the Bumper to Bumper program on a gorgeous, summery, late September afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero. I am the slightly, not hoarse exactly, but shall we say, head cold dominated host of the program. Garzy's the producer of the show, and we appreciate your participation in today's truncated festivities. Most of you know the Vikings swing back into action tonight about 7:30 or so. Right here on the Fan pregame show, and if I guess we call it Vikings Football Sunday on a Monday night, we'll begin at 5:30. So that means we got to get out of here at 5:30. So it's a 2.5 hour tour today, and we appreciate your being a part of the pregame to the pregame. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is open. It has been rebooted. Booth BOOTH at KFAN.com. If you would like to be part of the festivities today. You can also reach us, of course, via the TalkBack line, which most of you now know about. Don't hesitate to do so. Maybe we'll include that in the mix later in the broadcast. For the moment, Borton Volvo guest lineup includes a single guest. His name is Nacho Lieber. Ben Lieber will join. Scheduled for 4:15 from, I assume, the stadium. Will he already be at the stadium then?
He will not be. It is right before.
Oh, okay.
Right before he gets on a bus go to the stadium.
All right, fair enough.
He's like game time on time.
He is, and he's Dateline Philly.
He's in Philadelphia.
He's there. He's part of the Vikings Entertainment Network, Fan Radio Network as well. So Lieber at 4:15 this very afternoon. I mentioned off the top of the program, we are indeed your Making the NFC North Your Oyster Leader. Where does that expression begin? You know, the world is your oyster. Because technically what it means is you just open it up and it's the possibilities are unlimited. The world is his oyster. That's been said about, you know, a lot of big time professional athletes, for example. Very successful actors. Go down the list. Anybody who has had great success. The world is her oyster.
Like most things, it appears it goes back to Shakespeare.
Man, he is talented.
Prolific.
Or was talented, I guess. He's not alive,
Published
I don't think.
In 1602, the play The Merry Wives of Windsor.
Mm.
A character named Falstaff says,
okay.
I will not lend thee a penny, to which another character, Pistol, replies, well then, the world's mine oyster.
Oh.
Which I with sword will open.
And why is it that an oyster is considered like symbolic of such success or bounty? The oyster, do we know?
Well, as they say, a nice fresh oyster can be hard to open.
Ah.
But once it's opened, it's good.
Okay.
And it perhaps, Dan, may have a pearl, which would be valuable.
I forgot about the pearls.
For one's life.
That's a great point. Maybe it's the pearl part that really sticks with people because it has held up.
Oh, gosh. 6:02.
You hear it to this very day. And it does apply on this Monday afternoon and evening to the purple. We're already in a position where if we go to Philly and take care of business, we're in first place all by ourselves. We're 2-0 for Mike Yeo. Green Bay Packers did beat my Chicago Bears last night, but I will tell you, notwithstanding the fact that the Bears, well, actually, no, standing the fact that the Bears have no, there's nothing professional about their passing game. Nothing. I didn't think the Packers were that impressive last night. In fact, we're going to get to it on our very special, usually we do Vikings talking points the day after a Vikings game, but because there's no Vikings game this Sunday, they're on Monday Night Football, we thought we would do NFL talking points on the basis of some other interesting developments around the league yesterday. And even though Green Bay, you could say, took over the game with, I think they scored, was it 20 or 21 points in a single quarter, they didn't impress me that much against the Bears. They certainly didn't bounce back in a way that said, they're going to be dangerous this whole season. Meanwhile, the Lions, okay. They took care of business beating, was it the Commanders, the Washington Commanders?
Yes.
Yesterday, another great offensive performance by your guy, Goff. Much maligned in Los Angeles. I think he threw four touchdown passes yesterday.
The Lions scored 36.
They've lost and scored 35.
Mm-hmm.
They won and scored 36. They got to be the highest scoring team in the league.
And they come to the People's Stadium next Sunday.
For 2 weeks, and they are indeed our next opponent. Cute club. I think they have improved. But I don't really think they should be a threat to us. So here already early, we have a chance to stake our claim that the division is ours. And based on what I have heard, a number of people, some of them on this station say, overconfidence is our only enemy tonight. There are apparently a lot of people who will be shocked if the Vikings do not leave Veterans Stadium tonight with a victory over Dick Vermeil's Eagles. I'm not sure why there's that level of confidence, but maybe that's part of what it is, that we say, why not us? Why not now? It's been suggested elsewhere that the Vikings will score 40 tonight.
Really?
Like, that's, yes, on this very frequency. And, well, our guy Gessling has him scoring, winning the game, isn't it like 30, is it 34-31 or 31-28? He's got us over 30.
He teased that on Friday. He was going with it.
And I'm pretty sure he followed up. And I know I'm trying to figure out if they're onto something or if this is a classic case of, well, the Lions, or I should say the Eagles defense looked terrible against Detroit. The old overreaction to a single week of activity in the National Football League. Because I'm going to say I'll be gobsmacked if we score 40.
31-26 is what Gus okay. went with.
I might not be gobsmacked if we score 31, but I don't know. I still got to see more football before I'm ready to say. Because, again, we scored 23 against the Packers in week one. It was comfortable 23, but we didn't score 33 or 43 or 53. We scored 23. So we'll see. But I do think everybody's done it. Everybody's cheated and looked ahead because we can do that. We're not on the team. So we don't have to say we're 0-0 in the Philadelphia Eagles season. We don't have to say that.
That's right.
Because that's what we are.
Yeah.
But we don't have to say that. We don't have to pay attention to those limitations put on, don't think ahead. Because as you mentioned, it's Detroit next week. Then it's the London trip, right? To take on the Saints, who got knocked off. The team that always beats Tampa Bay didn't.
Not yesterday.
And I think Tampa Bay got a pick six in that game, did they not? Among other things, was it a fumble recovery?
I don't
one or the
remember.
Other. Yeah. It was a defensive touchdown, and
Jameis was not good.
Jameis was not good, and Jameis can be not good.
Right.
So the point is, this team does have a chance to get off to a very gaudy record. This would be the game just on paper because of the fact it's on the road, hostile environment, a team with some good players, that you say it would be a very nice victory. And tonight's the night. This is, I said, the opportunity to make the NFC North your very own personal oyster. You can't win the division tonight, but you can be in first place by yourself 2 weeks in. Bears 1-1, Packers 1-1, Lions 1-1. So nobody's 0-2.
That's right.
But nevertheless, we would be, if we are able to get this done, the only 2-0 team. Let me know how confident you are. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is open. Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at KFAN.com. And I'm sure we'll get a scouting report on the Eagles from Ben Lieber. It's not all that profound, I guess, to say that the most intriguing question for me and for a lot of people is, what do we do with their quarterback? Is it Jalen Hurts? Is that his name?
Yes. He's a problem. He's unique.
He's not a great passer. He's, I think, an improving passer, but he's not a great passer at all. And so the question, though, because he's a very good runner, and they make him a part of their running game, designed, can you handle it? Because even if he doesn't, put it this way, if he runs effectively, my God, make it stop in Cleveland. Make it stop.
You should remind people, yeah, the Twins are playing.
The Minnesota Twins, they've been long done, but to add insult to injury, Cleveland's batting in the bottom of the eighth, adding unnecessary insurance runs, and they now lead the Twins 11-4. Rocco has come out to home plate umpire with a notebook. It appears we're going to be making a series of changes, like a pitching change and then maybe a couple of other lineup changes as well, because you can never stop making moves if you're Rocco.
You got to tweak.
You never know what might turn it for you. My God. We got some good Twins ripping to get, and there'll be some Twins ranting today on one stat in particular that I had not seen anyplace else that blew my mind, but all in good time, because we do want to consider this the pregame. To the pregame, after Vikings fans have had a chance to maybe survey the competition. We talked about that Friday, how it's kind of cool sometimes to have a Sunday night game, or even better, a Monday night game. But if you're a football fan, then you can sort of, you know, concentrate on some other games that you might otherwise miss because of your obsession with the purple. You can see other teams in the division. You can see other teams in the conference. And by the way, to that end, I think, did I not read that... I think the Rams just lost another. They lost an offensive lineman. They almost blew a game against. Who are they? Who are the Rams playing?
The Rams. Let me double check for you.
They had fashioned a huge lead.
It was Atlanta. They won by like 3 or 4.
They lost a starting offensive lineman, I think, for the season. Everything's falling into place for your purple.
Trey Lance is out.
Well, that actually might be a. That might actually hurt the purple
might
in the conference.
Have ruined it for us.
Because Jimmy G came in and did what he does.
He's back.
Very good. Against kind of Seattle, the Seahawks. So, in any case, email me, hit the talk back line. We are going to talk a little bit about the, this is officially my first show as a Hall of Famer. And I do have a couple of comments I want to make there. I'm kind of sick of myself.
You clearly got after it this weekend with your voice.
Yeah, well, I wish it was related to that. I'm blaming that on Coach Barrero's kids. And that not yelling at them, just being near them when they sneezed on me, that kind of thing. In any case, we will talk a little bit about, at least one more time. Well, you know what? I may keep milking it. Everybody else does. Why shouldn't I? The big Hall of Fame weekend and the event that took place Saturday night at a very impressive Pavick Museum in lovely St. Louis Park, Minnesota, a hop, skip, and a jump from where I used to live back in my, you know, wild and crazy uptown days. So that'll be part of the mix. We may even play a little bit of sound from, I think, an Emmy Award, if not Oscar Award-winning performance by Josh Broughton, one of us Hollywood actor guy. And we'll also confirm that in my wife's desire to, you know, invite people to a little bit of an after party after the event, she ended up texting someone that she didn't even realize she was texting to invite them to the party. And some of our listeners might get a kick out of that as well. Let's get a quick pause in here. Let's try to somewhat stay on schedule. We'll take a look at some emails, a little more on the National Football League season, or I should say week two of the season, and some good NFL talking points from a very entertaining Sunday. There were some fascinating games, even if not all, you know, all the matchups looked all
FAN, the fan.
I tried to tell you that after the Twins got swept by the Guardians at Target Field, a hop, skip, and a jump from here, that it was over. Some of you wanted to cling to the fantasy that we still got five games in Cleveland. Anything can happen in baseball. Well, it already happened. It happened. Minnesota Twins lose today. They're edged 11-4. If I have my math right, we won all of one game of the five-game series. We avoid the sweep by our victory yesterday.
Frustrating.
That was the only game in the series we won.
It's right. Frustrating.
The series is over, right? It's not a six-game series, right? It's a five-gamer?
I think this is it.
I think that's the end of it?
I hope.
How could it? I mean, it has to be, doesn't it, at this point? are we now 73-74?
Hang on. Somebody on the field on Saturday, the Gopher game,
yeah,
said, how the Twins doing? I said, I don't know. They were playing later that night, so that was part of it. I go, I'm not sure. He goes, I thought you'd know. I go, yeah.
Not really. No reason to.
Yeah.
Well, because I don't even think the ESPN standings have been updated, because the game just ended, and they have us.
Yeah, they still have us at 500, 73-73.
So I don't think that includes this game. I don't think it can. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we started this game one game back one game over.
I'll keep hitting refresh.
Bottom line is that now it's just a matter of what date by which we will be mathematically.
Yeah, they don't have in eliminated. The, we, if you look at the winning streak in the standings, we still have a one game winning streak, so they don't have that we've lost yet. So we would be 73-74.
We'd be 73-74, which means we'd be seven games behind Cleveland, which means we'd be eight games behind Cleveland, because they've already won the season series. So to win the division, we'd have to finish a game ahead of them.
I believe so.
So it's all over but the shouting. And it's cruel but true that if the Twins had been mediocre start to finish, they would have been ripped less than they will get ripped because of the sequencing, right? It did raise expectation enough that we were duped into thinking that if you are aggressive at the deadline, you might give yourself a chance to really pull away in this thing. And we were also heartened by the fact that we were adding a couple of pitchers that we were going to have contractual control of for longer than just the end of this season. Only one of the three pitchers we got were rentals. And nothing could have been further from the truth, because from the trade deadline forward, I was for a while tracking that record. We've got good, I guess you could say, amateur producers of the show.
Yep, exactly, yeah.
Let us know Associates. What our record is starting with that day. We lost that day, that night, as I recall it. What's our record since the trade? We made three deals that we were all feeling pretty good about. It's well under 500. And so it's human nature that, because the division has been so crappy until now, the Guardians, well, you know, I mean, look at the Guardians' record now. They're going to be, with this victory, 80-67, which is not any longer a record you got to apologize for. But because of the division seems so weak, because of the situation we were in, it was like, yeah, you got to take advantage of this. So you're going to get ripped more, especially when you spend the first month and change looking like a pretty intriguing club if they could just get some help from some other places. But here's the stat that, to a certain extent, I believe says everything we need to know about how screwed up this organization is right now. Well, actually, there's two, but I'll stick with the first one. I'll save the second one for later, maybe even the next segment. This was from, what's the date today, 18, 19?
September 19th.
This is from September 16th. It's a tweet from Phil Miller, who covers the Twins for the Star Tribune. Listen to this. Bailey Ober's five-inning start today marked the sixth time this season that a Twins starter was removed after five or more innings despite allowing one or zero hits.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Think about that. Think about what that says about the mindset inside this organization as it pertains to pitchers. It's preposterous. It's absurd. And before you email me with, well, everybody's kind of doing it, everybody doesn't have a bullpen as crappy as ours. No matter what the numbers say about, well, I looked it up. Third time through the order, he's going to give up 12 hits. Before you even bother with that, you have to factor in, but who are the pitchers you're going to? How confident are you in them? And the answer is, except for one, maybe I've been too hard on Jaxie, but that's it. It's been awful. Dreadful. Embarrassing. I mean, I didn't even believe it when I read it. I had to read it like three times. Let me read it a fourth.
Yeah, please say it again.
Bailey Ober. He's back, by the way, finally. Another one of our starters today went two innings and then stiffened up. But either our training staff is the worst ever, we're the unluckiest team in the history of baseball, or something else is afoot here. Everybody gets hurt. Everybody stiffens up. Everybody has to be taken out, despite the fact that we do more than any other team, apparently trying to be modern about our approach to pitching and about being safety first with our pitchers. Bailey Ober's five-inning start today, that was the 16th, marked the sixth time this season that a Twins starter was removed after five or more innings despite allowing one or zero hits. It's why I have so little sympathy for the condition of the club that I don't want to spend that much time. Well, yeah, you know, the injuries are just unfair. Who could survive the litany of injuries? Look at what has the way the lineup has been racked. All of that has some truth to it, but I refuse to spend all that much time on it because all it does is it enables the ball guys to make excuses for this team. And there aren't enough excuses that I think anybody should have proper cover. I'm not calling for anybody's head. I'm not interested in that. But I am saying, what are we, in all seriousness, why are we paying attention? If this is the new order, why are we paying attention to it? Why are we unable? And again, that's where it's hard to know. Do we hammer Rocco? Because somebody said to me, tweeted back at me one day, you're mad at Rocco for a decision that was made at 10 in the morning.
Right.
And there might be even some truth to that. So I'm not saying it's all Rocco, although there's a part of me that wants to say, God, Rocco, show a backbone. Say, I don't care what I was told at 10 a.m. I like the way this guy was pitching. I'm going to keep him in another inning. You know why? Because I don't have enough relievers to do it the way you want me to do it. You were going to say?
I did some math,
okay,
which, as you know, is always dangerous. I think I brought up my calculator, too, because your rant went extended, so that's good.
Okay.
August 2nd, that was the trade deadline, right? We were at Vikings training camp. Tuesday, August 2nd. As we know, they lost that game that night
to
Detroit. So let's start there.
Start with that. So that's 0-1.
So we were 54-49. Well, I started with that record. So I guess I have to add another loss.
I think we were 54-48 before the trade.
So we'll do that.
Yeah. All right.
So then we are 19-26 then since the deadline.
That's actually better than I thought it would be.
I know. That's why I triple checked it.
You sure your math's right?
I'm not. But we're 73-74 now. So 54-73, that's 19. And then a 48-74 would be 26. So we're 19-26 since the deadline. I mean, we could take, you want me to take Kansas City out?
And well, then it's really fascinating. Yeah. Then it is well
maybe
under
I'll do that during the break.
That's not a bad idea. When we come back, I'll give you the other stat and then another symptom of why so much is screwed up with this organization. And frankly, even its TV broadcast, honest to God, we'll get to that. And then believe me, plenty of Vikings, Ben Lieber at 4:15. I've got a couple of matchup questions for you because I know you like to drill down deep into the X's and O's.
We're 12-26 without Kansas City.
12-26.
Take seven victories out of the way.
That says it all. Regarding Vikings, Eagles as well. And then the Vikings Football Sunday pregame show on a Monday night will begin at
Get the Fan.
We have become, I think, over the last week or two, definitely your breaking news from the world of chess leader. And this is brand spanking new from today, earlier today. Have you heard about this yet?
No, I was going to say, when you hit the breaking news sounder, I got nervous.
Chess's biggest drama escalated yet again this afternoon with Magnus Carlsen resigning in protest after just two moves in a rematch against Hans Niemann, who was accused of cheating against Carlsen in a recent tournament, sending the chess world into a tizzy.
Ho, ho, ho!
That's the way they wrote it, advice.com. A tizzy. The moment, which occurred during a preliminary matchup in the Julius Baer Generation Cup, one of your favorite chess events, stunned the event's announcers, who were speculating about what opening moves Niemann would play. The match took place virtually over Microsoft Teams and on the online chess platform Chess24. Carlsen turned to his webcam, or I should say turned his webcam on, made one move, resigned, then turned his camera off and disappeared.
Wow.
He did not say anything. Well, it's very difficult to say what opening move Niemann would make because Hans is also playing a lot of first moves, announcer Peter Lecko said. He plays d4, knight f6, then Carlsen resigns. And what? No, what just happened? That's it? What? Tanya Sokdev, the other announcer, says. We're going to try to get an update on this. Magnus Carlsen just resigned, got up, left, switched off his camera, and that's all we know. Right now, unprecedented is how it's being called. I guess I shouldn't assume that everybody knows the backstory, right? Niemann was accused of cheating against Carlsen in a recent tournament. That led to the speculation about, well, how was Niemann cheating? Carlsen's a world champion. And it got pretty graphic about what might have been on the personage of Hans Niemann. He denied it and, in fact, said, if that concerns you about what I might be embedding in part of my body, I will gladly play chess naked. That was where we kind of left this story.
Late last week, we talked about it. Yep.
Now escalated yet again. So I don't know if this means Carlsen is still convinced or even more convinced than ever that Niemann cheated and Niemann still hasn't fessed up, owned up to it, or not. But that's where we are in the world of chess. A couple more Twins notes before we return to Vikings coverage and a look back on the Hall of Fame weekend. Because there's definitely some nuggets I want to get to with Garzy. And we might even play one bit of sound. Phil Miller again. This was from September 18th. So this was 2 days after his tweet regarding Bailey Ober's five-inning start, marking the sixth time this season that a Twins starter was removed after five or more innings despite allowing one or zero hits. Joe Ryan just did something almost as rare as a no-hitter. By getting Tyler Freeman to fly out, Ryan became the second Twins starting pitcher this season to record an out in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
Think about it. The only other, do you know who the other one was?
I do, because we talked about it the day after, and now I'm blanking on who it was.
Dylan Bundy.
Bundy, yes.
Improbable choice,
yeah,
but it's Bundy.
He hadn't gotten out of like the third for like three straight starts,
yes.
And then on a Saturday night, he went into the eighth, got the out, and
it,
that was
at Arizona.
Yes.
That goes back to June 18. So this entire season, Joe Ryan did something that only one other pitcher's done for the Twins this entire season. So how many games have we played now? What's our record? Whatever it is.
73-74.
It's two games out of that. Don't email me with, well, a lot of pitchers don't go into the eighth anymore. It's not the point. We're all those things to the 10th power. We go above and beyond. Whatever the chalk says is the way that the game is indeed going. And Saturday, what struck me was I was in and out of coverage, and that was the doubleheader day. And in the, let me see what inning this was. Oh, yeah, it was the eighth inning. In the eighth inning, your guy, one of your favorite youngsters, Matt Wallner, hits his, I think, first career home run. Did you hear about this? What happened after?
I don't think so.
Well, apparently the Twins want to go retrieve the home run ball because it's his first.
Yeah, makes sense.
And the guy who caught it or had possession of it played very hard to get with it and was being kind of difficult about what he wanted in return, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's not unprecedented. That's happened before. But what astounded me was the fascination on the broadcast with the negotiations. At this point, even after the home run, the Twins are losing 5-1 in the second game of the first game of the doubleheader, second game of the series, season on the line, if you want to believe that it wasn't already over, which I did. But in their world, it's season on the line. Showdown five-game series to try to get back in this thing. Rome is burning. It's burnt. And we're going, oh, I wonder, this is fascinating. I wonder how they're going to resolve it. Mornozzi then says, I'm going to text, I can't remember who it was, the Twins official, who was doing the negotiating. And look, I get it. It's the Twins broadcast. And you don't want to be negative. And so you're trying to fill the time in a game that's lost, in a season that's lost. But the people watching aren't idiots. They're not stupid. They're fans. They want to see their team do well, but chances are if they're watching at that point, they also don't want to be lied to. They don't give a damn about the negotiations for a home run ball that will have no impact on the outcome and no impact on the fact that the Twins' season is frittering away into nothingness. But they went on, and they turned it into a Wagnerian opera. It was endless. I don't even care how it was resolved, because it doesn't matter how it was resolved.
I wonder if he got the ball.
I hope, by God, that he did. I really do. But I'm going, wait, I'm scratching my head. I'm going, are we up 5-1? Am I confused? They spent as many shots on the negotiations over whatever wall than they did on as the game itself. I'm going, do you really think you can buy off the fans, that you can distract them this easily from the fact that Rome is burning? My God. Why aren't you talking about, well, here we are, man. This is now, we're two games in. It's the first game of the doubleheader. What happened? None of this works. None of this is good, and we're going to revel in the home run. We're going to revel in the second game that we were plucky and came back in the game. At this point, there's no, literally, if you want to buy the notion that moral victories exist, or might exist in April, May, or June, even July, fine. But they don't exist in late September when you are a hopeless number of games behind and the only way you can get back into it is to play really well and win a bunch of games in a five-game series. And by the way, that Saturday, and this the second game where we came back in the ninth and then lost it in, I think, the 23rd inning. It went on forever.
Yep.
We had it on at home during the event. It became like, you know, in a sort of ambulance chasing way, some people, not surprising, including Royce, were watching.
Royce got there pretty quickly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
But in all seriousness, the game ended there on an error by our shortstop. Was it Palacios at that point? Is it Palacios or Palacios? Whatever it is, it was a horrific play. And I'm, again, same thing, going, this has to do with, it's all connected with the pitchers. Why isn't Correa at shortstop? Oh, he was shortstop. It's a long day, and he was shortstop for game one. Doesn't matter. This is it. Again, if you want to buy the notion that we're pulling out all the stops to try to give ourselves one last chance to get in this thing, don't you have him at shortstop every game? Every game. He's not 52 years old. How old is Carlos Correa? Will you look that up for me?
He's like 26 or 27.
He's not even 30.
He's 27.
Honest to God.
He turns 28 in a couple of days.
It's the kind of stuff that it's all symptomatic of the larger. You could say any one of these things, no big deal. But you put them all together and you go, what is going on over there? And now, maybe somebody will tell me, I think second game he was DH start to finish. I don't think it was the kind of thing where he started in one spot and then they moved him, you know, like he was started at shortstop and then they moved him into the DH role. If that was true, email me. Brian Inbox.
0-for-5 as DH.
Okay.
In that particular game.
It's just, all this stuff is so maddening, but thank God on the home run ball. So cute. So wonderful. Wonder if we're going to get it. Emailer Paul, overreacting. Why? Apparently, Paul wants Pablum on his TV broadcast, apparently. He just wants, what's the macro? What does macro mean? Micro, what's the difference between micro and macro?
Micro is the small.
Okay.
Macro is the big picture.
He just wants micro. In other words, within a given game, if a Twins player makes a good play, or there's a controversy involving home run ball, he's fine being fixated on that. The macro doesn't interest him. The macro is, we're blowing our last chance to do anything. It's not a good look. And so I don't expect the TV broadcast to go scorched earth. That's, I understand, not realistic. But I'll tell you, people who try to tell you, it's true of all the regional networks, you're wrong. You are incorrect. They're not all wired the same way. They're not all built the same way. It is here, across the board, basketball, football, baseball, whatever the case may be. Well, mainly basketball and baseball, maybe some hockey as well. I just thought more fans would want a little bit more macro, like, man, what? Here we are. This is it. Cute story, but you can say in the name of reportage, you continue to follow it and just update people on it. But to go with it almost wall to wall, like it somehow is going to change the outcome and to take away the sting of the fact that we're blowing it. It's a 5-game series. We're about to lose the first 2 games of the series, which means we haven't left ourselves any margin for error. I thought you had to win 4 out of 5 anyway. I would say to Paul respectfully, I'm not overreacting, you're underreacting. You should expect more out of the broadcast than from people getting fascinated by something like, and by the way, it's, you know, how many, done a million times. It's just not that special. It's okay. It's special for that person. So I understand why teams want to do it, but to devote that much time and energy in the broadcast to it, unfortunate. Don't forget Ben Lieber to help us talk football. In fact, at 4:15 from Philadelphia. And when we come back, let's get to some NFL talking points with Gardzi. He's got some he's put together because there were some interesting developments in other games yesterday that certainly caught my eye, and we'll give you a couple of those talking points. Some of them kind of related to the purple, some you could say.